Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in. Welcome to Onsite and Offshore, a dedicated podcast for professionals involved in offshoring projects, where we chat with business owners, project managers, analysts, and software developers who have successfully supported their overseas clients from India, and also connect with entrepreneurs who outsource the work to offshoring firms. I'm your host, Suresh Ashok, founder of Matsya and Fintech, with a passion for selling and supporting offshoring projects. Introducing our special guest for today's episode, Mr. Ashish Dasta, the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer at Congruent Infotech. With over three decades of valuable expertise, Ashish embarked on his professional journey as an audit officer before venturing into the world of IT. Initially serving as a functional consultant, he has since ascended to a leadership role within Congruent, where he has played a pivotal role for the last two decades. Under his guidance, the company has consistently achieved remarkable year-on-year growth in year earnings, while also witnessing a substantial increase in cash reserves, investment, and employee satisfaction. Furthermore, Ashish is an acclaimed author of two books, The Leadership, Navigating the Dark Hole, and Sandwich, The Real Art of Team Dynamics. Welcome to the Onsite and Offshore Talk Show, Ashish.
Yeah, thank you very much, Suresh. Thank you for having me here. It's indeed my pleasure to be with you here today.
Thank you, sir. It means a lot, you allocating some time for us. Ashish, as you know, started this podcast dedicated for the professional involved in onsite and offshoring business. And you're someone who has spent, you had a remarkable career so far, like, you know, I think close to 20, 30 plus years, Ashish, in managing international businesses.
Yeah, more than three decades.
Oh, fantastic. So, Ashish, can you recall the starting point of your involvement in international projects? Do you remember the first client you worked with? And do you remember any specific task that was assigned to you? I mean, this is our signature question, the theme of our podcast. Anything that comes to your mind, Ashish, like, you know, when you started your international, working on international projects?
So I will say, in terms of international projects, working with international clients and projects, what the beginning for me was not in IT.
Right.
It was in accounting and commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And from 1992 to 2000, I worked with a German company. So there was a lot of interaction with them. But the first interaction in terms of a project was our SAP implementation for the unit. That's where I worked very closely with the German counterpart, even went to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So that was around the year, I guess, 95 or 96. My first taste of working on a project, mm-hmm. which is IT related, with international clients. In this case, it was the German. So that's where it started. But thereafter, as I came into IT, there have been many that I have interacted and worked with. I have personally implemented a lot of solutions. Thereafter, Maldives was one area, place where I have done many large-scale implementations. And thereafter, I have been interacting with clients at different levels, both as CEO and CFO, accounts manager, as well as functional consultant. So I would say my very first, if I remember, was around the year 95-96 on the SAP implementation for the unit.
Right. But prior to that, you were an audit officer. So even while working as an audit officer, you had the exposure of managing international clients. Am I correct?
As an audit officer, it was more in India.
Right. Okay.
But then at the same time, I worked for a company which has roots abroad.
Mm-hmm.
That was that time called KPMG, the offshoot of KPMG. So there was interaction with that client, but in a very limited manner.
Right.
But mostly in terms of clients for the audit, it was more in India.
And the first task where you spent a large amount of time was for an SAP implementation. That was an IT project.
Yeah. No, that was, again, uh-huh. I was then the heading commercials for a factory. So we wanted to implement SAP. So I was inducted into the core implementation team.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that unit, the core implementation team, I was involved in that project.
Right. And how did this journey happen, Ashish? Because you started your professional journey as an audit officer in 1986 and remained in the accounting field for close to 14 years. And by in 2000, you decided to transition into the IT industry. Could you explain, elaborate on the reason behind this career shift and what influenced your decision to pursue a career in IT?
So, Suresh, this phase of where I made the transition to IT was not a very good one because you have to bear with me for a few minutes to talk about where I came from. Of course, I am a chartered accountant.
Right.
And I started my journey with an audit firm, of course. And it was in 1991, I made a shift to the corporate sector from the audit firm.
Right.
And as a chartered accountant, you, when you're in an audit firm, you get a lot of importance from clients, right? So you work with them. At that point, they used to look as auditors were God. And I got used to that culture.
Okay.
And as a CA, somewhere on my head, I thought I knew everything. So when I came into the industry, it was a rude shock for me. Yes, I knew technically what is to be done, but I had no clue how to manage people.
Right.
So that was a time I had a very difficult period. I had many bad instances, issues. I was geared out by the union twice. I had a difficult time. I would say I built very toxic relationship with people. I just couldn't manage. And I left about two jobs. But people are also very happy to see me go because they were not happy working with me. Now, after that period, there was a second job, I think, when I wanted to again move out because of that kind of situation. And of course, I also could not handle politics. I could not handle the inter-office issues, anything related to people. And then I started looking for another job. And I could not get anything in Kolkata, where I was at that time. And that's when I had to come to Chennai looking for a job because my cousin was there. And then he said, look, IT is booming. And now that was about the end of, middle of 1999 when we started a discussion. I was looking for a job in accounting and commercial in Kolkata. I could not get. But he said, why didn't you come here and look around? Because now a lot of companies are looking for consultants who have business knowledge because the technical people are not understanding. And I was not getting something, so I came to Chennai, and that's where I got an opportunity as a function consultant. And that was my start. So I would say it was accidental. It was not a good situation when I came in, and it was definitely not my intention to be in IT, or it was never a conscious decision. But once I came into IT, I somehow took a great liking for it. Even my first implementation onwards, I took great pleasure and passion, and people started respecting me also for my knowledge, my business knowledge. I found a lot of interest in that. So, from the middle of 2000, I would say.
Right.
And that's where my journey in IT started. So, it was not a conscious decision. It was more a situation of being a toxic leader, not being able to work.
Right.
But one of the changes that happened when I came into IT in 2000 was I learned from my previous mistake. I knew I had to survive. And with time, I realized I changed. I was more receptive to change. I could realize and understand my evolution triggers, which will help me to grow. So I worked on them very hard. Plus, I took a liking for function knowledge. And my understanding of business was respected by people because I had very deep function knowledge in terms of the business, in terms of the marketing. And that's when my journey started. And I'm extremely happy to be in the IT industry for the last 23 years.
Right. And being a CA, what all learning you went through to move into the IT industry as a functional consultant? Do you think working in the accounting background helped you in any which ways to work in the IT sector in terms of, like, you know, being a functional consultant for a software product?
I think it's the experience of working in the business as a commercial manager. That's where I don't think that you're a chartered accountant just because you're a CA, you know business.
Right.
It is more about using that knowledge to learn business and use it in business. I think that's what I did. My experience, you know, as I told you, my those years, 1991 to 2000, were horrifying. But then that experience of how it works and what I should do really stood me good. I became more aware of myself, one. And I also, in those 9 years, learned how to do business with people, how to learn, how to understand. So the knowledge helped me to get the job, or rather than being a CA, but more that helped me to have a better understanding. Yes, just because I was a CA, I could pick up the business part of it faster. That much I would say. But it is more my experience of business and the kind of exposure, although it was adverse, it really helped me. That is what I would say. Right. But yes, being a chartered accountant does help to understand business better.
Fantastic. And as both the COO and CFO of Congruent Infotech, what are your main focus or what are the main areas of focus and responsibilities in each role?
So I would divide it into two parts. Mm-hmm. First is what defines my success as a COO and CFO. Mm-hmm. So first, what are the success factors? That is what I would like to talk about. And to me, my success factors are, but before that, I'll trace back a little and or maybe I'll come to that later. But let me talk about my success factors.
Right.
I would be successful in my role if I can give quality solutions, because that gives you repeat business, as you know.
Right.
Because in our kind of business, referrals and repeat business is more than new business, as you know well. So giving quality solutions to the client is very important. That's my key success, you can say my KPA. My second KPI is that if I have to give good quality solutions, I need good people. And so I need to hire good people. I have to keep them motivated and engaged in the organization. So I have to retain them. So I have to do whatever possible in keeping my employees happy. So that is my second factor. And the third factor is to keep my employees happy, I have to also spend money on them. So building the company financially strong, mm-hmm. so that we can withstand the pressures, because there will be ups and downs in projects, building the cash reserve. So my success factors are quality solutions, employee satisfaction, and building the company's cash reserve. Now, if I have to, so then my role becomes, how do you give quality solutions?
Right.
One, of course, to set up the right processes and systems, so that everything works as per the process and system defines it. The second part is, employees, take care of your employees in whatever way possible, be it in salary, be it in training, and whatever way you do. And properly manage your accounts so that you can keep building, properly invest that money. So those are the areas of my doing which lead to the success. But one important point that I've realized is, it is not about the profit of the organization which defines me as a CEO and CFO. Because if the company is making profit, everything is good. It just works. Right. It is rather in bad times, where the company's valuation still stays strong, you can run the company even without projects. I think that's the real key success factor to me. So that's where the building cash reserves and valuation despite up and down in projects is very key. Employee, how you keep the employees motivated in different ways of training, compensation, benefits, whatever, and giving that. So these are the main areas of my responsibility. But if you round this all up, my job is to build that kind of environment where people can function. Like in US, if you go to US, can you drive right hand? You can't. Left hand? No, you have to drive right hand.
Right.
In India, you have to drive left hand. And here the signal is a guideline, as you know. But in US, it is not that. So it's an environment to create that when people come, they automatically work towards this. So my main job, if you override it, is building the right culture within the organization. In encompassing these three things, quality solutions, employee satisfaction, and company stability in terms of strong company valuation and results.
Well, absolutely, Ashish. I've witnessed that during my brief tenure in Congruent Infotech with you. Like, I mean, it was limited with in terms of interaction with you, but still, I think the one thing I would like to mention over here is you have never been negative in terms of interaction with anybody. I've never seen that. I think I was with Congruent Infotech for a period of 1 year, if I'm not wrong, 1.5 years. Not even once I would have walked into your room and you sent something, anything negative, irrespective of the sales was coming in or not. I've never experienced that with you. I'm sure, like, you know, that's the way everybody else in Congruent Infotech feels that as well. And Ashish, you mentioned about process. Sorry, go ahead. You want to say something?
No, so that's very important. If you really look back at the history of Congruent with money.
Right.
Like, it is he who promoted it. It got into the blood of the organization. And he has played a big role in that, giving us the leeway, giving us that space. And because it all comes from the top and it cascades down. I think that's what has happened in our case. Sometimes you don't, when you come in, you have to follow a certain pattern
right.
That you can't miss. Like I said, you get sucked into the system.
Right.
That's a very good thing, because that's the kind of culture I am trying to define, that if anybody comes in, we'll have to work in this manner so we get the results. So it comes from the top, and money has really built that in that direction.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while. I haven't interacted with Mani. I'd like to have a word with him as well. And
sure, Akash,
you mentioned about process and system. Do you want to talk about any real incident? Like, assume you were not happy with certain things happening in your office, certain culture, or certain process which existed. You want to redo it. Anything, those sort of thing comes to your mind, like where you felt,
There are many to talk about.
Right.
And before that, I will talk about process and systems is something that has to be in place, but it was in place, but sometimes people don't appreciate why we have a process and system. So it is not mere to about a change in process, it is more to change the mindset of people. I'll give you a simple example. Even now, when we are working from home, or we did during the pandemic time, I insisted that people fill up the leave application form. It is not that we don't trust people, and it could be a very simple thing. Filling up even timesheets every day.
Right.
Filling up your leave account. So my process starts with basic, because that's what builds your discipline. And as the organization grows, unless we have a discipline and system, like in a cricket match, you can't bowl under and over and as you wish, right? There are rules and regulations that has to be done. So my process implementations, one aspect of it is to build that strong discipline into the system, although it may sound very silly. It is not that we don't trust people. I have focused heavily in this area.
Uh-huh.
I have invested heavily in this area to make the systems more user-friendly, should I say. But I have also insisted more than the system investment for people to really do it in that manner. So the insistence of the process has been very, even at the very basic level. That's one thing that I have done. The second thing, a process is to give you a guideline, is to define. If you have set rules and regulations, it helps you for any new person in terms of environment. That has to keep changing with time. What has worked before has not worked. Let me give you again a very simple example, timesheet. You fill up timesheet application, but there are projects where the client expects them to, our people to fill up on their website also. I can't ask them to fill up twice.
Right.
So to keep changing the processes that they don't have to do twice, but they keep how you can port the data. I have always insisted on this from a discipline point of view. That's one aspect.
Right.
The second point in terms of my process has been that data and information should be always available.
Mm-hmm.
Project data, other data. So I have implemented process from that angle as well. I have never implemented process to pull up people, and that is never my intention.
Right.
In terms of that. We have revamped the leave application system, we have revamped the timesheet system, and now this year we are completely revamping our HR system. We are investing heavily on it. We are investing heavily on a project management system. What is the objective here? First, people must be disciplined, because as you grow larger, and now we are more than 250 people. Earlier when I joined, we were just 55 people. It is not possible to manage everybody unless there is a discipline and environment for that. That's my objective.
Right.
The second objective is for people to have a guideline, okay, so what to follow in which situation, the process defined that. And third, have data so that we can take info. We have report at the right time and can take timely action. So I have always insisted on that. And this year, I would say, I've invested heavily. I've told you we're revamping the HR application totally. We are scrapping our old systems. We are going for a completely new project management system. We have brought in a new project consultant who is advising on the different processes. So we are investing heavily. At the same time, I am sensitive to changes, because the systems have to change according to the situation. We also do that. So my objective of implementation where we invested heavily are these three, and I'm continuing to do so.
Fantastic, Ashish. Thank you so much. And Ashish, what kind of resistance have you faced when you implement a huge process like this? I mean, as you said, it's a basic thing people have to follow. But again, with over 250 employees working in different regions, different countries, what kind of resistance have you faced when you're trying to change a process which existed before? the employee resistant as well as the management resistance. Do you want to talk about it, give some highlights about it?
I think it is very natural as a human being.
Right.
It is a question of all about doing a great work. They are very busy. They are working in multiple projects. They are working a long time. They are doing different challenging work. And these things don't come into their priority list. Now, that's understandable, but at the same time, it is important. So it is more of telling them that this also needs priority.
Right.
That is what is important. I do understand their position.
Mm-hmm.
But when you want to really bring a change, you know, my own feeling is that it doesn't come by consensus. You have to first push them, force them to do something. And when it will force them, then it goes into their blood and they understand the benefit of it. So I would put it that way. I understand their point of view that it is not a priority item. It is not a defined, they do it. But I want to change that to a state where I first will enforce that you need to do it. And slowly, slowly, they understand the benefits. And that's my process of implementation. And in that, there are challenges. As I said, people don't give this priority. So it takes a bit of time, push, a lot of push to implement something. And slowly, slowly, it becomes changed. It has changed a lot. And it has to continue in that way because new people keep coming in every day. Again, you have to start working on it. So I would say lack of prioritization has been my main bottleneck, which I face, which is understandable. They're not doing it knowingly. But there I have to push to get things done because I can see the benefit. And they're also seeing once they start implementing. But the initial thing has to be a force.
Okay. So which team resists more? For example, under your umbrella or under your guidance, you have the accounting team. I'm sure you will also interact with the sales and marketing team and the technical team. Which team do you find, I mean, any process you implement, you find it difficult to implement and interact with them?
I think it's a very general thing. Accounting could be more disciplined because in any case, they have to do accounting.
Right.
But if you look, take out accounting everywhere, people are more forced to give quality solutions, get new business. How much would be going into the process to document what you're doing, to what you're doing. So I would say it's a general problem and it is not only incongruent. I think it is everywhere where you have to keep pushing to get things done. So I wouldn't like to mark out somebody very specifically that that's the problem. It is a lack of prioritization, I would say, because they're already pushed to give work and projects are challenging and they have to get business. And the point is they're getting business. They're getting the work done. We're getting repeat business. In that case, what do? You have to push to some extent so it gets into their blood. And if they have genuine problems, to handle it. But I would say it's a problem not only in our organization, everywhere, and we have to deal with it.
Right. And as a chief financial officer, I believe your primary responsibility is to ensure the financial well-being of the organization. So when developing the annual budget for the company, like, you know, what specific areas do you prioritize?
So very first thing I would like to talk is, even if I am the CFO of the company, I've come to realize one crude fact. I don't control profits of the company because it is entirely dependent on sales.
Mm-hmm.
So if the sales is not there, you can't expect me to show profit.
Right.
That's not in my control. So the very first thing that I have been clear in my mind is my focus area is to build a company's reserves, to make the company stronger. So even if there are no projects, I can run the company for years. I don't know what you call that, but that's the mindset I come to the CFO table. So my very first thing is when you're making money, you have to invest a lot of it. How do you invest? So every day I see how much you're investing and what you're doing. That's my real focus. In terms of cost, I don't think cost itself is something that I control in that way. Yes, we must optimize cost because our main cost is HR cost, which is people cost. Now, people cost is defined by the market, their performance. And if I don't keep people, they won't go. So budgeting I can do, but the fact is in IT, in HR, you know how ridiculous it is in terms of pricing. I don't know whether I should use the word ridiculous. It is all driven by market force
right.
And how it works. So my focus is, I cannot say my focus is on budgeting.
Right.
I definitely work on the budget every year. I see where you can optimize, but I'm more focused on investing, and I am more focused on seeing how we can give quality solutions to keep growing. Because my main ticket item is HR cost. So what will I control in HR cost? If I need people, I have to hire people. I have to pay them as per the market. If I want to retain people, I have to pay them as the market. So I'm not sure how we can budget it. And I'm not a guy to spend time seeing how much you spend on tissue paper or dishes or food. That is very limiting. What we need to invest, we need to invest. But yes, we have to see that we don't invest more than what is necessary. But to me, the cost budgeting of it is not that important, as in the fact that there is very little for me to control because HR is controlled by the market. So I would rather focus on what I'm getting, how much I can do, so how much time the company would running. So you have to invest more money. That's what my all focus is. But yes, we do budgeting. And I prefer zero-based budgeting where you don't look at the cost of previous year. You take every employee again, what they will be getting. You take all items of HR admin and then you start afresh. Don't give a 10% or 5%. And every month keep monitoring it, working with the team on how we can optimize or whether we are within budget or not. That's what we do. But we follow the zero, like my view is, you must follow the zero-based budgeting system. But to me, that is not my main job, I would say. Because right. HR cost is defined by the market. My main job is to see how I can make my deliverables more efficient so that I can, for the same number of people, I can churn out more business. Because that's what will give me the right cost optimization instead of hiring people. That's where I focus.
Right. Ashish, the point you said was, one of the points which I want to ask you was, you said the growth of the company is not in your hand in terms of revenue generation is concerned. That's purely in the hands of the sales. But in terms of running the company for a period of 1 year, even that is minimum sales, you have to focus on the reserve. So what are the areas you focus on in terms of cutting down cost is concerned? I hope I'm putting it across properly to you.
See, in terms of business, yes, mm-hmm. It depends on the customer. Whether I get business or not is not in my hands. And more important than that, I cannot plan by saying that there'll be 20% growth. I never do that.
Right.
I always look at the fact of if there is no business, how many months I can run the company. Today, if I can run for 24 months and my target is that I want to run for 50 months, so I keep investing money. I look, I have different ways to invest that money, mm-hmm. make more money out of what I have. I think that's where my real focus is. So when you say cutting costs in IT, where will I cut costs? Because my 90% cost is HR cost.
Right.
How much is it? It's our own building. So there's no rent. It's only some admin, sysadmin cost, which is nothing much. It's about 1% maybe. And sales and marketing is the other area where I have to invest on that. So my areas, when you say cost reduction, and that's typical for any IT company. Yes, you can do if you have huge real estate. You have, and we have been very clear about what we'll spend on admin. So there is very little scope for me if you think about it. So I am more focused on doing more with the money I have, making more people more productive, investing that money, and from that investment make more money. How I'd be focused in. But right. With our cash items to reduce, right. My scope is very limited.
Right. And what type of investment, Ashish, you're talking about? I mean, you've dropped in.
It could be any. It could be fixed deposit. It could right. be mutual. Another important thing, as you know, in our business is hedging.
Mm-hmm.
Where you guarantee with exchange rate. But now your exchange rate is thankfully in our favor. And most IT companies are making money out of exchange rates only. So I have to protect myself against fluctuations. So when I do hedging, I have to ensure that and protect it and I get a better rate. That's also a big area mm-hmm. where the dollar converts to rupees, we gain a lot. So hedging is one area. Investments is another big area. We have to do mutual funds and fixed deposits.
Right. Fantastic. Thanks for the information, Ashish. And you've also started writing. I've seen your books available in the market now. As an author of two books now, Navigating the Dark Hole and Sandwich, what motivated you to embark on your writing journey?
Okay, so this again goes back to, I would say, when it was only COVID time.
Mm-hmm.
during the COVID time, a lot of realization stuck. You're sitting at home, you can't work. And a lot of realization at that point, I was about what? I'm turning 60 this year. So I was just 2-3 years away from retirement.
Right.
In that way. So just thinking what to do. Now, how long will I work and what I should do? A lot of thinking, talking to my wife because we are only two people at home.
Right.
At that time. And so just thinking what to do. And then I somehow my liking has always been to train people. I don't know when this liking came. I want to share my knowledge by training people. I do a lot in congruent also. So I thought I want to be a trainer. That's how all things come. So what should I do? And that was a time where I was looking to get trained as a trainer. So train the trainer program. So I joined a training in Chennai, which is called Indian Academy for Training and Development in Chennai, to be trained a trainer. So I got trained how to be a trainer, one. And secondly, also I joined Passionpreneur Movement, which is you become a passionpreneur, how you can become an entrepreneur. I joined those groups at that time, and because I was interested to learn how to become a trainer. And one of the important action items of that was you have to build your credibility on the social media platform. That's how it started. And they used to give us plans. That one thing they did was every week we had plans. We had to do this, we had to do this. So initially I was very hesitant to make even videos. But then I was pushed. There was accountability, peer pressure. I started making slowly videos with my experiences. That is one thing I did which I'm still continuing. Another area what we were told was how do you build your credibility through the social media. So there you have to make videos, you have to give quotes, you have to also write books. That was emphasized to us. And when one other thing that was told was is when you start making the videos, think of all the problems that you face. Convert that itself to a book. That idea was given to us. And we were told these are the ways to build your credibility in the market. And I, in fact, I'm very thankful to my mentor, was Fatah Khan that time, a fashion trainer. He wrote an action plan. This is what you should be doing, Ashish. And I have followed it that way. But when I started following it, I have also liked it. Writing the book has been something where I wanted to give it back. And this was also a great way to put your thoughts together, to do training. So this is how this whole idea was born, my social media presence. And making books as a to establish your credibility, and I enjoyed satisfying. My advantage was when I started writing, doing the videos, the ideas came very easily for my book.
Right. Well, I've gone through your website as well. I should thank the photographer. You have a good photographer, Ashish. The first pictures you have as a banner.
Only thing is, I may be looking 20 years younger, right?
No, I was wondering, like, you know, what you were trying to say, because your both the hands was fairly facing upwards. You know, I was like, what is he doing? I thought of asking you separately over the phone, but I thought I'll bring that in the conversation.
Yeah.
And so, could you elaborate on any obstacle you encountered during the writing process and how you managed to overcome them? Because that is a completely different thing, right? Been a CEA and worked in IT, and then started writing books. Good, you know, you had a good mentor, as you dropped his name in the conversation. Any obstacle you faced, Ashish, while writing the book? And what are the challenges you faced?
So getting the thoughts together in terms of what I want to put in the book, because of my so many years of experience, so many failures, so many problems, was not difficult at all. I knew what will work on the ground. I'm a very realistic guy. I know what will work on the ground. So I knew this is what people need to do, and I had. The problem was, when I started putting it, I did not know how to put those words in terms of a book. Because when you're training people, it's entirely different from when you're writing a book. So the idea was never a problem. I knew what to write, but how to put it was a very big challenge. I really struggled with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really struggled for a long time. Till I got somebody in Kolkata through a contact who really showed me the way. He told me, this is how you should do it. He was a journalist. And he showed me, this is how you should write. And he gave us some samples. I worked with him. I think that was a big writing. And even after writing also, it was not coming out well. So I had to go to different people, editors, who gave me perspectives, and I had to think about it. So my post idea, converting to book, how to convert it so the readers find it useful, where you have to give your stories, where you have to give theory, that was a real, real challenge. And I would say I'm still working progress. Even now I'm thinking about my third book, which will come out middle of next year. Mm-hmm. Even then, I have all the ideas, but how to put it together, that's where is a challenge. And one good thing I know now is I have got one or two people who have that editorial mind to help me out. So that way I'm assured, and that's not something I'm going to do at all. I'm going to pass it on to them. But my initial hiccup of 6 months was I just didn't know how to write my ideas and thoughts. That's where that person gave me away. This is how you should write. This is how you should do. That was really helpful. But the first 6 months was a real struggle. It is even now a struggle. But now I know. I have my ideas. I just put it down. And then I give it to them to give me the ideas on which I'll correct. I'll start depending on them. So I wouldn't even go to the editorial part. But yeah, the first 6 months I was clueless.
Right. And what's been the response from your readers regarding your books? What kind of positive feedbacks, or even if it's negative, like that, what kind of feedback you've received so far?
So people have given good feedbacks. And one, I'll give you one incident which really gave me a lot of satisfaction.
Right.
I was, after the publishing of my first book, I was in Jaipur. That time, in the hotel, in the lobby, there was a library. They used to keep libraries there. And so I asked whether I can leave a copy of my book here. Mm-hmm. So I left a copy of my book. That was 1.5 years back. Not 1.5 years, maybe last August, September. Right. In 3 months, I got a message from somebody. And said that I have read your book there and really liked it. It is very useful. So it is a great feeling of satisfaction for me. And people who have read who know me who have read the book. So there are two parts to it. One who will give me critical feedback. One would be socially good and say nice, nice. I'm talking about the people who gave me feedback. Have said, okay, this is what we felt. Because one of the things that they liked about my book is I have written in very street-like language. My English vocabulary is not that great one. And I don't prefer. I put it in action plan and in terms of story. So I have got a lot of appreciation. I have also got feedback.
Right.
For that matter. Feedback in terms of this is where it is not clear. Why didn't you put a summary page here? So I have not heeded all the feedback, because some I feel should be there, some should not be there. But I have got very constructive feedback as well as appreciation. That in Jaipur, that person came back and wrote and appreciated my book. I think that was a real validation moment for me.
Right. Well, I saw some of the pics of the book launch, and I felt happy as well. And I'm going to order both the books, Ashish. Actually, I wanted to do it before this interview, but you know how the schedule were, in terms of talking to you. So I'm going to do that this weekend, and I'll also put my reviews as well as feedback. Fantastic. That's great to know that.
So one thing that I say, Suresh, about my book is that
right.
I made it very clear, even when I had my book launch, even in the book I write about it, there are two important aspects you must keep in mind. First is, this book is my perspective. A lot of people told me to write, okay, why are you writing like this? I said, this is my perspective, this is my experience. It is up to you to follow on. One thing I say. And every person should listen to all perspectives and then cook your own dish. That's what I say. What worked for me will not work for you. But at the same time, I'm giving you all the ingredients. If you know my perspective, if you know 10 other perspectives, you don't know which will come to your use when. You will be richer with that perspective. So it's my perspective. It is not for people to agree or disagree. The question is my perspective understandable to you? That's my first point. And second is, I've said that in my book, I've written a lot. So people have also asked me, and I've addressed that question, do you follow yourself 100%, like walking the talk? And I made it very clear, no, I can't. I do not. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I falter because people change. You have to change strategy. But I know where I have to go, and with every day I'm making progress. So one reads the book, you have to keep these two aspects in mind.
Another thing to ask, Ashish, on this, on the book, who are your intended audience? Whom are you targeting?
if you say that, listen, these are the people or from this background or this domain, if they read this, they might learn something out of it.
So when you write a book, you can't say this is for a particular audience. But then, if I have to answer that question, I would say the audience is in the IT industry where I spent 23 years. I have a lot of value to add to people.
Right.
And first-time leaders who are facing your or any leader who is struggling with people-related problems. That's my audience.
Fantastic. And when you're planning to publish the next book by next year, right? Mid of next year?
Yes.
Ajitan, what, I mean, as I said, this podcast is, the theme of the podcast is onsite and offshore. And Congruent Infotech has been in the business for the last 25 plus years now.
Yeah.
What value does Congruent offer to his international clients as an offshore partner?
I think the very first thing, if I have to talk about Congruent, is we are very grounded. We set the right expectation.
Right.
That's the key about we don't promise the sky. We are very clear in terms of what we can deliver. And we give the right picture and we are very grounded. That is one I would say about Congruent. We set the right expectation. Secondly, I would say the personal service that we give. Individual. It is for every client, for every individual, the kind of attention that we give. I think that's something that stands us out.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, quality, reliability is there. That is there for anything. But I would say we are very grounded. We are very realistic. We don't promise the sky. We are always very upfront in what we can do and not do. We give personal attention to people. That's the second point that I would like to talk about. And third is, of course, understanding the problems of the client and trying to do our best, whether we agree or not. I would say these three stand out for me, my own experience in Congruent.
Right. And when you say grounded, can you give an example on that, Ashish? I mean, with any case?
No. So the point here is about grounded is the customer wants this.
Mm-hmm.
If we cannot give, we say we cannot give. Or you cannot do, we will not be able to do this. This is not advisable for it. I will give you an example for my own case.
Mm-hmm.
In the year when I went to Maldives, correct? And they wanted to do a, because I went for requirement study for fixed assets implementation. But when I went there, I said, no, I won't do fixed asset implementation. I want to first study your system. They're very unhappy with me.
Right.
I want to first understand your problem. I was upfront about it. I then understood their system and then told them fixed asset is not your problem. I'm not going to do fixed asset. This is what you need and explain to me. So it is not what the customer comes with. It's to understand their problem and tell them this is what it is. And also be very realistic of the date, what you can deliver, what you cannot deliver,
mm-hmm.
and be very clear. Set the right expectations. So we just don't give what the customer asks. We give them, we understand their problems and try to address them to the best of our ability. That is how I define being grounded.
Right. And could you also provide a detailed explanation of the steps involved in completing a project at Congruent? With some example of a recent projects you have completed. I mean, some of the points which I want to know is who are the intended audience for Congruent services? I know Congruent offer quite a few, Microsoft Dynamics and Salesforce and Azure. And what is the process for obtaining contracts from international clients? And how do you define the scope of work for your project? I have a set of six questions I want to ask related to projects, but I'll start with this three. Who is the intended audience for your services? What is the process for obtaining contracts from international clients? And how do you define the scope of work for the projects?
As you know that we are primarily offshore.
Right.
Although we have some on-site presence and people do travel, but we are primarily offshore.
Right.
So we are very clear about that aspect that we are offshore. So the one people who work with are our Microsoft partners and other partners who get projects whom we can deliver. So it is you're going to develop something or you're going to enhance something. That's where we come in. So we work with what we call the ISVs who are developing products
right.
in different spheres. I said those are our market. End users who want to develop something or revamp their system. I would say these are the people who are looking to build a product, enhance a product,
mm-hmm.
or develop a solution. This is where we come in. However, with time, now we are also extending night support. We have started moving into support in a slow manner. Mm-hmm. So end users and ISVs are our primary focus. We have in recent days also worked with not-for-profit organizations because they want to also improve and revamp their system.
Right.
So that is a third audience that we work with. And Microsoft partners who get projects from their client and right. we execute for them. So our end users, ISVs, Microsoft partners, and non-profit organizations.
Right. And what is the sales process like? And how do you go about obtaining new contracts? Because as you said, Congruent is purely offshore and you guys take pride in working from offshore teams.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Right. So the first of the step of sales and marketing is the marketing effort itself. And our marketing efforts are of two types. One is the referral and contact. And one, of course, is the digital marketing, where we run marketing campaigns to generate leads in different forums. And of course, contacts and references, it comes to different word of mouth projects. So that's the marketing part of it. And then comes to sales. The first part, of course, is to qualify the prospect.
Right.
And whether we can really service the client. As I said, we are very grounded. We are very clear upfront what we can do or not. And then at that point itself, I don't think we have a solutioning of pre-sales team separately.
Mm-hmm.
It is a part of our technical team. They get involved to understand whether we can do what they want, understand the requirements. Let's say we have the pre-sales study, understanding the requirements. Giving a proposal is the next stage, where both the business development guy as well as the project team is there. Once that is done and the project is signed, there's a negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
Project is signed and the project gets tipped off. So at that point, the handover happens to the technical team. The technical head is now in charge of the project. Then there's the kickoff, the regular, you follow the Scrum methodology, you follow Agile, or you want to follow Waterfall. You have the different process. But the very first step after the kickoff is, again, understand the requirements clearly. At the proposal stage, you don't go into that much detail.
Mm-hmm.
You then understand the requirements very clearly, and then that is the first thing. We call it the requirements document. After that, you come with the design. You do the design, and we come up with a high-level architecture document with wireframes, and then only the development starts. Now, there's a difference, I understand, between Waterfall and Agile. In case of Agile, it depends, and if it's Waterfall, some projects where there is only a product being made, it is important to get the requirements done through Waterfall and then follow Agile in development. But as far as I'm concerned, the requirements should be done in a Waterfall. First, get the requirements clear before you even go to the Agile methodology. So I would say Agile methodology is for development.
Right.
For a design architecture, there has to be at least 75 to 80 weeks clear. Then we start development either through Agile or milestone-based. Once development is done, we go through the process of QA, user acceptance testing, and then finally there's a go-live. And all through the process, the account manager is involved. It could be the business development manager himself or somebody other designated who will keep in track with the customer to understand how is it going and take it to closure.
Right. Any feedback you received from the client on any of the project you have completed recently? Any positive feedback?
I think there are both positive and negative. So there are two. It is very important to understand what do you mean by feedback.
Right.
And what is the success of a project.
Right.
If you're talking about projects being delivered as per the requirement of the client, what they look for, I think we are very successful. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
But there are always questions in terms of issues of how we communicate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
There will, of course, be where the requirements are not very clear. So there have been always feedback on that. Okay. One typical problem that I think every offshore company faces is that we expect the requirements from the client.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally so. Sometimes the client will know, I've given you the high-level requirement. You should be able to develop because you are the developer. You will know better than us how to develop it into a system. I believe that tussle is very important, big area that we face a challenge. We said, no, we know the requirement, but you should also understand what is that you look for. What are your problems? You give it to us, then we'll convert it to a technical language and give it. That is the problem. I would say this is a big challenge area for big projects, one. Second area is to understand each other in where we are working, what is it, and that takes time. So for long period we have run, because we are running projects for 5 to 6 years, the initial first period is always a problem. There are complaints, there are issues, there are tensions. And for this, Suresh, I'll take you back to the team evolution. You know, it's forming, storming, norming and performing. It is exactly the same. The first period, you're getting together, you sign a contract, is good. The next period where you get into the requirements, no, this is not what you said during the project stage. So there are always problems in this. And I think there will be frustration, tension. So I cannot say this is good. But once you have crossed that period, you stabilize at a development, then it becomes smooth. So the question of success is, yes, we are delivering. But the problems in this journey are always there, because there will be initial problems to understand each other, what the requirement is. And that happens very frequently for us. I cannot single out one project to say success or failure. Right. Every project is a success because we are delivering. But the effort to go into that, the challenges that we face, I think are common across projects. So I'm redefining the success and failure in that regard.
Fantastic. And I can recall my conversation with Mani when I was working under him. The one thing when he used to tell his client was, take this as an investment for the next 6 months. You know, that's the way you should work with the offshore team, build it up. And also when you settle scoping of work, have proper documentation. Just because someone giving you a requirement doesn't mean you jump and start the work. Have a clear-cut scope of work, define the proper documentation, prepare a proper documentation, then get into the agreement with your client before embarking into the journey of development. Correct, Ashish?
Well, absolutely. I think what Mani has actually said, the way I have learned expectation setting from him.
Right.
He's very clear, very grounded, and he set the right expectation. A lot of times we have people working who are not that great in communication, is the way we understand it, correct?
Right.
But if you set the expectation with the client, okay, you may have a problem to understand each other. Imagine what big change it will bring. So expectation setting plays a very big role. And it goes back to my theory of leadership also.
Right.
Despite your best efforts, every day you'll face problems. There will be challenges in every project. It's a question of how you manage those challenges. I think that is where the success and failure is defined. Ultimately, you will deliver the product. There's no question about it. But how you manage those challenges, how you set expectations is the real, because every day you will face problems. So expectation setting, there's a big role. And I think Mani has led the way in this. Like the 6 months, he says, you'll have problems. He often says.
Yeah.
So you set the expectation. Okay, I know there will be a problem.
Right.
If you can overcome that, setting expectation, good communication, setting realistic, you will be able to handle the challenges better. But in every project, there are challenges. There are challenges.
Absolutely.
Requirements are not clear. They look at it that way. We think about it, and they're very natural to do it. So you ask me which project is a success, which is a failure. I would say every project is a success, every project is a failure. We ultimately deliver, but the challenges in between is always there. It is how efficiently you manage those problems and challenges is the key. And I think we are doing a fair job in that by good expectation setting and good communication and account management. That is how I would put it.
Well, absolutely agree with you. Like, I've recently, I'll give you an example where I received a piece of work on Dynamics work from one of my clients in Germany. And there was a communication gap in the sense, he shared a scope of work and he was asking for an estimation. And I responded back, give me 2 days, we will come up with an estimation. And he understood as within 2 days, we will complete the development work. And it went on for a while and I received an email, listen, this is not done. Guys are delaying it more and more. And I said, listen, I just told you within 2 days, I'll submit the estimation, not the development activities. So yeah, I've experienced that as well in terms of communicating to your partner or your clients properly. That makes a huge sense, Ashish. And do you believe the offshore...
In fact, I would add to this, Suresh, that I'm going my own one experience.
Mm-hmm.
This was at somewhere, I think it was in Maldives, if I'm not wrong.
Right.
So I was meeting a company, the executive director of finance.
Mm-hmm.
For changes, and so after giving the requirement, said, I want this done. Can you do it in 15 days? That was the point.
Yeah.
And I was, it's a big thing, and I was getting a new entry into a company, and The natural tendency is to say, okay, yeah, we'll try and do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what happened to me that day. I said, so I cannot tell you right away. I have to first understand your system and tell you, I really cannot tell you. And I was very scared. He will drive me away when I said that.
Right.
But after that, he said that exactly. That was the reply I was expecting. If you said you'll agree to 15 days, I would have not given you the project.
Okay.
Whereas in the first line, when I did in Maldives, I said, I won't do fixes. I said, why? You have been asked to do, you just said, no, I won't do it. Because that's not your requirement. And I told them, and they understood that with time. It really helps, you know, that kind of expectation setting. Because challenges and problems will be there. It is how effectively you manage. And with expectation setting and being realistic grounded, I have learned from money.
Right.
And it is really helpful.
Right. And even for this client, Ashish, I'll tell you, I had a call with him again to sort out the matter because things were getting heated. And I told him, listen, the resources are occupied in other work as well. And this is a time and material engagement model. So if you give some piece of work to me, I need to pull out a resource from another project or whoever on bench. And then only I can think about getting into something like this. It's not on a retainership model. And then only slowly understood. So yeah, so there was a communication gap between us, but now it's sorted out. And we're getting some good work from them. And Ashish, one more on the offshore part. Like, you know, do you think the offshore team receives due recognition for the contribution they do, the kind of project they work on?
That's a very, how should I put it to you, difficult question for me.
I'll tell you why, the reason for me asking you this, because I, like, you know, I interact with lots of people on a day-to-day basis as a sales guy. Every time people throw me this jargon of cheap labors, the Indian guys don't understand, they don't get the work done properly, there are lots of issues. But when I look back, the kind of development activities our guys are involved in, that is when my mind changed. Listen, it's not the way, on and off, there may be some failure in terms of delivery is concerned. But on a large scale, it's the kind of work what team does from offshore, I think that's been remarkable, Ashish.
So let me answer this question in 2-3 parts.
Right.
The first question is there are some people, some resources who directly work with the customer. They are recognized for their good work. We get good feedback. They are. But there are a lot of projects where it's only the project lead talking and there's a big team at the back. The appreciation could come for the team in terms of the overall work they're doing. But individually, it's very difficult to do. And there are a lot of times where customer raises a complaint, whereas our team feels we have done our best. In this case, I think, again, that expectation setting is very important. And that's what I tell people always, that if somebody is complaining to you, it is your job to ensure that the complaint doesn't come again. That means if you are really doing good work, there is no good visibility to your work. That's why the complaint is coming. You're not managing the communication well.
Right.
You may be doing great technical work, but then that is not enough. Your work must be visible that you're doing good work. You have to give proper communication. You have to set right expectations. I think that's where the problem comes in. And we are lacking in that area. So I wouldn't go to say that they're not getting appreciation. Yeah, they're good technical people.
Right.
But people have to work in this area. And I go by my theory of leadership. If you are the problem, you're the solution. If something is affecting you, you have to find a solution.
Right.
It is foolish to depend on somebody or to blame our client didn't say it. Now you find your way to do it. So when you say there's no appreciation, I would say, are we doing enough to make our work visible? And I see a problem there.
Fantastic. I think that's a new piece of information Shamun
right.
has thrown in our in the podcast show. Because few people have said not enough recognition. But yeah, that's a new dimension of thinking.
Yeah, I say it's their fault because then they have not made their good work visible.
Right.
And because a lot of time the client gives requirements.
Right.
The client gives a requirement or they give something and you can't speak anything in terms of the client to accept it. And then there are problems or client is giving additional work. You can't say anything now. And then you start saying the client didn't accept, we did more for them. I said, it's entirely your fault. At the right time, you should have communicated or sought help. That's what will define your appreciation to the client, not just your technical work is guaranteed.
Yeah.
So by your mere technical work, if you're looking for appreciation, I think we have a problem.
Fantastic. And Ashish, what advice or suggestion would you give to a foreign clients who are interested in collaborating with Congruent for any IT projects?
So one thing that I always say, it is not for international any client.
Mm-hmm.
look at our track record.
Right. Okay.
Just look at our track record and decide for yourself. Am I the only company? No. But look at my track record.
Right.
Companies are working with us for 13 years, 14 years. They're not fools. Mm-hmm. They're big companies. They're working with us. There are so many companies who work with us are continuing to work. I can give many companies who work with us 5 to 10 years.
Right.
There could be ups and downs, but they're continuing to get, if they have a requirement, they get back. Why do they do it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my answer. You look back at our track record of what we are doing, one. And second is companies trust us. There are companies where we have started working with them, we build relationships, and they have asked us to build up new practices where we had no experience because they trusted us. So it all comes from third-party validation by our work. Why you should depend on us, and our track record proves it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my advice if people are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for a trusted partner, then look at our track record and you won't regret it if they come to us.
And Congruent has also served some of the Fortune 500 companies. When I look at the client.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Amazing.
We do. So I'm not going by the fact of whether I'm serving Fortune 500 or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the criteria. The criteria is if I have a client, how long are they staying with us?
Yeah.
They stayed for 10, 15, 16 years. Why are they staying with us? Because they're getting value for their money. That's important to note. I think that's what the defining point is for companies to look for offshore. More importantly, and I think I go back to my success factor, you know, quality. Yeah. If you have to give quality solutions, only then you'll get recognition. That's why they're staying with us. Means
right.
We're giving quality solutions.
Right.
And how we are able to give quality solutions? Because employees, our average employee tenure is more than 10 years. There are so many people who stayed in the company because they're earning out, because we're keeping our employees happy. And I can do it if I have enough money. So I'm building my cash reserves.
Mm-hmm.
See, it goes back to my success factor. If you fulfill your success factor, big companies and organizations will continue to work for you. And they've also given referrals, big, big referrals.
Right.
That all goes to show that, yes, you should depend on us. And we have a good track record. That is what I would say.
And Ashish, what website or portals do you frequently browse to stay updated on the latest technology news or any subject which you prefer reading on a day-to-day basis?
I read a lot of books. I keep buying books on leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep reading. I'm a student for life. That is there. I keep reading. I start implementing. So any book, I keep visiting bookstores. And whatever I get my hand on, especially when I'm passing through airports, at least one or two new books I'll buy. Because you don't know from where which new idea will come to you.
Fantastic.
That's one part
True.
Of it. However, as of the moment, now people are looking for audiobooks and others. Well, I also do it when I walk, I hear.
Mm-hmm.
So I frequently visit LinkedIn Learning. I have found very big use of that.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone to Udemy. I've got a lot of courses. I am now doing what you call it Audible, where you can hear Audible books.
Right.
These are the three main sites I visit. And another site of leadership which is helping is the Harappa School of Education. So these are the sites I primarily do. But whatever new article comes in Google in my feed, I also read them. But if you're looking at the portal inside, these are the four, apart from my book.
Right. Well, I've also become a fan of audio listening now. One of the reasons I started this podcast is because, I mean, I picked up this running habit from money. You know, so I used to run late night. And the only thing I used to listen was like, you know, Sales Success Story. It's a podcast called Sales Success Story, where the guy interviews all the successful salespeople from US, UK, you know, in different parts of the world. And they talk about the target, how they achieved the target. So that is when the idea came in, I should also something create like this, and ended up creating this on-site and offshore talk. And Ashish, the IT industry can be quite demanding, leading to high level of stress. How important is it to have a healthy work-life balance, and how do you spend your weekends?
Well, I don't believe in what you call a healthy work-life balance.
Okay.
To me, it is all the same. It's life. You have to manage when you have to do what, when you need to do. But I'll go back to a question that is very stressful.
Right.
It is very stressful. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
So two things help me in terms of what I tell. Because for people, the first thing to tell is self-awareness. Make them understand that every day you'll have problems.
Mm-hmm.
I give them a very negative picture because I'm a negative person myself. I tell them every day things will go wrong. Every day you have problems. Be mentally aware of that. So when you're mentally aware, that's one.
Right.
And second thing I tell them is, leadership, we are there as leaders because we have problems. If there are no problems, we are not required.
Right.
It is all a problem. If you can overcome your problems, you will get success. It is just not you overcome your fear.
Right.
So when you set people with that negative mindset, what happens is that people are more prepared to face stress. Self-awareness is very important. One. Second is, another important thing I tell people is don't believe anybody, including yourself. That's a very controversial statement. But what I, in a positive sense, expect things to go wrong at each stage. What will you do when you expect things to go wrong at each stage? You'll be better prepared. You'll have a lot of risk. Okay, this will go wrong. You will then automatically get success because you're resilient to face any challenge that come your way. So these mindset setting up is very, very important in IT, in leadership in general, anywhere, IT especially. And when I get a negative feedback from somebody, I pass it on to the team and they feel very bad about it and tell them there's nothing to feel bad. That's their perspective. Now you have to work on it to see what is good and bad and work on it. Prepare. Face these challenges and then expect challenges, expect things to go wrong, be better prepared. And when you face those, learn from them and become better. Like when there's a crisis, what is said? You should lead from front. I say you should hide. Why? Then your team will learn how to do and do better.
Right.
And then guide the team how to have love. Give them that training. But the mindset that they'll be stressed, be better prepared is very, very important. Have a negative mindset. I say people should be a negative. That's the new positive in the way you see.
Fantastic.
That's very, very important, you know, setting the mindset. Because when you know when there's a problem and a disbelief mindset, you expect things to go wrong, you're always prepared. I know there's a project. I know what are the risk factors, what will go wrong. And I'm prepared. Okay, this can happen, this can happen. I'm better prepared. In fact, I become more successful. This is very important in the IT industry. This must get into the mind. Nothing is good. Everything is going to turn bad. That's the positive. And that's what I do.
Right. Fantastic. And Ashish, where do you put your money for investment? I mean, you come from a healthy accounting background. What advice you would give to a youngster? And at what stage, I mean, I won't say what stage they should start investment. They can start at any time. How do you want to take it, Ashish? Like, you know, you prefer stock as an
investment. Are you talking of an individual or an entrepreneur?
Well, as an individual, like, where you put your money for investment, you put it in stocks or gold or real estate. And also what advice you would give some youngster out of college, starting their career, how should they start their investment plan?
So I would give advice, not as an accountant, I'll give advice for my failures and what mistakes I have done. The very first thing is I bought my house pretty late.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to pay hefty EMI. So it is very important to start early and you learn from experience. Even now, it is very difficult for youngsters. I don't know what advice I'll give because it is your circumstances. But I can definitely say you have to start early. I am not a great fan of mutual funds somehow, but that's a personal opinion. I prefer fixed assets and debentures, which is fixed, and investment in houses. That's what you need. These are the three areas, and you must start very early. Your EMI is less. You'll recover less. So it is very obvious that you should do. I can talk from my own part. I started very late, and I really suffered.
Right. Do you have a set morning and night routine that you love following, Ashish?
I have a calendar which starts with getting up at 6 a.m., having Apple at 8 a.m. That's my calendar. But yes, I follow my calendar to the... I have calendar. Everything is scheduled. And depending on... I always plan. Like Thursdays, I plan for next week, what I'm supposed to do. And every day night, I keep planning on what are the priorities and what I need to work on. So I cannot say I have a set plan. But I do work as a calendar and I keep revising and updating my to-dos, my calendar. Once I do it for the week and then every day I keep updating.
Fantastic, Ashish. Ashish, I have to say this was a pleasure talking to you. I've learned a lot from whatever advice and suggestion you're giving during this conversation. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule and having this conversation with us. Thank you so much, Ashish.
Yeah, my pleasure as well, Shreya. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Take care, sir. Bye. Thank you so much for joining us today on Onsite and Offshore podcast. We hope you found our conversation insightful and engaging. And remember, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. That way you'll never miss an episode and will always be up to date with the latest insight and discussion. We love hearing from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to reach out with any questions, comments or feedback. You can find us on social media or shoot us an email. Goodbye and take care.